This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. Who are the Greys? Why are they here? And what do they want? Is there some connection between all kinds of strange phenomena people encounter here on Earth? Are we all caught up in some kind of cosmic joke? Pondering these thoughts with me this week is our good friend Philip Kinsella, as we dive into his latest book, Terrestrial Trespassers. But as always, before that, don't forget you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up at patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content, and more. You can also click the link in the show notes, and thank you to each and every one of you that support me and Mysteries and Monsters with your contributions. You can find Mysteries and Monsters across all social media platforms. Please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. You can also visit mysteriesandmonsters.com for news and episodes. Please visit our exclusive merchandise site via TeePublic, with the link in the show notes as well. Our intro and outro music are performed by the marvellous Weary Pines. Thank you as always to Dean Bessel for his wonderful artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys, and Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange network. If we're to make any progress with the problem of high strangeness, do we need to reevaluate everything we think we know? In his latest book, Terrestrial Trespassers, author Philip Kinsella takes a candid look at the abduction phenomena and other areas of high strangeness that surround it. Why do some of these creatures exist in the shadows? Is there a connection to link differing reports and encounters from around the world? And if so, do we need to reevaluate our understandings of these strange events? Philip, delighted to welcome you back, sir. How are we?
I'm very well, thank you, Paul, and I'm really honoured to be back on your show again. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad you wanted to come back, Philip. It's a mutual success, I feel.
Yes, absolutely. Everything works and all connected. So I always say that we're all linked together and we all help one another. That's the way that I've always viewed the whole of life. How much easier it would flow if that was really the case with a lot of folks out there, eh?
Absolutely. Very much so. I think sometimes we forget how similar we really are rather than focusing on our differences.
That's right, absolutely.
Philip, this is a bit of a departure following on from your most recent work, because obviously in regards to tackling this multi-tentacled phenomena that seems to be occurring, I think, and with some of the people that you've collaborated in regards to some of the work that they've allowed you to publish in this particular volume of your book, Philip, it seems that there seems to be a more sort of open-minded look at what most people would think is a pretty nuts and bolts situation in regards to the abduction theory.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that all stems back to the 1989 event that occurred to me in the winter of that period, in the village of Master Mortain. I'm not going to go into the abduction. It's happened. There are certain parallels that have been made by another research with regards to that. But that actually opened up my eyes to this whole suggestion that the abduction occurs on a very physical level of reality. And with myself included, going through part of that experience, demonstrated that I was able to move through solid matter. And I wondered how that was possible. So, you know, we hear a lot of accounts and reports from individuals who've had so-called abductions, and I always assumed that they occurred on a very physical level of reality, but this opened up a whole new can of worms for me. And it was in 1996 that when I was pondering this whole issue about what had occurred to me, it wasn't unique. Many other people have gone through varied experiences, if not slightly different, but what is termed as an abduction. And I kept thinking, well, how was that possible? Have we got this wrong, or am I wrong, or are there varied other levels that we can look into with regards to the so-called abduction phenomena? And in 1996, it was the only time in my life, a period of when I can only explain if this is the correct word, a download. I was at work, and I think for the many years afterwards, I was trying to establish this question. It was as if my mind was opened and I was given this idea, theory, if you will, and it is just a theory. And it was about the Greys, most notably them, because that's where I centered most of my research, and about what they could possibly be or their intentions. And when this theory came forward, it clearly demonstrated several components to the reality. And this also opened up areas of research into human consciousness, life after death, as it were, because the article that I wrote out that very night, and it took a few days to complete, and I submitted it to a magazine called Alien Encounters, a well-known magazine during that time. And I was very honored when they considered it revolutionary within its speculation. And it is just speculation. It's just theoretical within its content. It is a model. It doesn't mean to say that we're correct. So I think that when we look into the abduction phenomena and questioning how those intelligences are infiltrating our plane of reality, I feel needs further evaluation, because in a lot of the cases, if we take the very famous and very quickly 1961 case of Betty and Barney Hill in New Hampshire, they had seen a strange object. Barney had viewed it through his binoculars at close range. And then the part of the abduction they don't recall and came through in dream state. So I'm not saying that the abduction phenomena happens on a dream state. What I'm saying here, Paul, is that there seems to be an alteration within the so-called physicality or non-physicality, as it were, with regards to the connection of these experiences that people have. And I believe that we may possibly be dealing with some type of interdimensional intelligence that is piercing our veil through methods that we can only dream of. So I think and feel that the original angle of the nuts and bolts syndrome was something I embraced. But you, like yourself, Paul, as a good and wonderful researcher and many others out there, you'll find that you go through a process of transmutation, of change, that your ideals that you had during that period change continuously because of the discovery that this phenomena, UFO UAP subject, as they changed the acronym, very strange for something the system doesn't believe, but anyway, that it draws you into other areas of research. And of course, you know, we're still evolving within our understanding or acceptance of that understanding on a conscious level, I think. So the book deals specifically with certain models, some of which have already been noted and well known, i.e. us from the future, those beings operating on the lower level of reality. People call it hell, whatever another terminology, I suppose, demons. You know, the interdimensional hypothesis, the hyperdimensional hypothesis, the cloned issue, which I have addressed, the spiritual ramifications involved with the greys and what could happen to us if we began cloning and not coming through the normal process of reproduction. So in a nutshell, you'll find that when you start going down this road, the models that I've been considering within my mind and have certainly changed. And this is what my book, Terrestrial Trespassers, wanted to explore, not just the rawness of the 1989 experience. And I will tell you that was very raw, the memory of which has never left me. But now contemplating the larger issue of what we are actually dealing with.
It's been quite striking for me sometimes, Philip, because I've been listening to a lot of interviews with Bud Hopkins and John Mack this year. And it seems to be something that occurs occasionally in this particular field, that you will go back to the well, as it were, in regards to some of the previous research that you may have sort of put on the back burner for a couple of years. And I don't know what struck me this year, but I've listened to a lot of Bud's work and interviews from the sort of late 90s and early noughties before we sadly passed away, Philip. So I'm very intrigued as where we look at the situation now to the kind of work that Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and John Mack and others, such luminaries of that particular field of research, were in. I mean, obviously David Jacobs is still around. I spotted him recently online sending a very short and terse message to the head of the UAP investigation, which was began with the letter F and finished with the letter F, which was nice to see that even in his older age he seems to still include his fighting spirit when he comes to dealing with these issues.
Yes. I did meet him in America, in Arizona, yes, many years ago, and we had a long chat. And I respect the good doctor and his theories, as I do indeed with every theoretical model that's thrown out there. I will not subscribe to the fact that it's just one phenomenon, like i.e. nuts and bolts. I think we're dealing with something that's multifaceted, multi-complex within its content. And I agree with you with the prominent and wonderful and very famous researchers, as you have just mentioned, and their work very much respected. But I believe that to a degree, with regards to this phenomena, if it were operating on a physical level, then we would at some point have had some kind of physical proof with regards to one of these specimens, one of these beings at least. But you'll find that the phenomena continuously eludes us on varied levels, not only within our own conscious recollection of the events, certainly the secretion of memory from certain abductees or experiences that go through these so-called encounters, but also the very nature of the entities themselves. They seem to hide within the shadows. They don't seem to want to connect with us on a united level. And this is where it gets very murky in terms of the UFO department, when you have one section that deals with the love and light and the other section that deals with the really nasty fellows. But, you know, you get attacked, as I do, and I'm sure that many other researchers, stating that they know what they are, where they come from, their names and all the rest of it, their high command. I lose the plot during that point. What I'm really interested in is the nuts and bolts theoretical model, the truth of where these beings may be coming from, and also with regards to their intentions, which are, I must admit, slightly murky, but we can try and put some things together, included within that model of content, to establish what we may be dealing with. But I think it's a phenomena that is continuously eluding us. And I think Jack Vallée himself is very much correct in his assumptions that this force seems to change its facade as it moves forward and as we progress forward. So I believe that with regards to the Greys themselves, that they are interested within our physiology. They appear to know much more about us than we know about ourselves. They know about the human mind. They know how to penetrate that. They know how to, if it's done from their own, secrete memory. And that is an interesting subject because in terms of the research I've been doing, my kind of like connection is that what the Greys are doing or what they could possibly be doing is removing the real part of you and bringing the real that real part of you into their dimension, their space, where interaction is possible. And this is where I, back in 1996, drew a slight parallel between the abduction phenomena and the near-death experience, both of which operate on separate levels. But if we look into the NDE, when someone clinically dies, they report, in a lot of cases, of going down a tunnel towards a light. They are in a timeless, spaceless domain. They communicate with loved ones via telepathy. And invariably, what normally happens is that if there is an illness or some kind of disruption to their biological system, on their return from their journey, temporary severance from the near-death state, when they return, in a lot of cases, there is a complete correction in the alteration of whatever they were suffering from. Now, what's interesting is when an abduction occurs, there is this feeling of being able to go through solid matter. Communication is achieved through a mental state, i.e. telepathy or mind speak. There is a sense of timelessness, and also anything that the beings that do to you within that state will, I think, invariably still affect its physical counterpart. And I'm talking about the body and, if I may walk across this very delicate line here, the soul, consciousness, the spirit, as it were. So this is where we take into extent the interdimensional hypothesis. And also we must remember that with regards to the Greys, there's been a lot of reports, most notably from David Jacobs and others, Bud Hopkins, John Mack, about this hybridization program. Now, when I went through my abduction, I didn't see any hybridization program whatsoever. But I felt back in 1996 how curious it was for a species that cannot themselves reproduce, are interested in a species that can. And of course, Paul, what happened then was that this opened up a whole gateway of other ideas or possibilities, a framework of the true intentions of this force that's operating currently as the Greys from their side of life. So it is interesting, I think. So, you know, I think whatever you state, whatever you hear, whatever you accept is important to your structured belief system. So, you know, we are treading on some very delicate grounds, and I have been criticized, I have been attacked. That is normal. I'm strong enough. I can stand up to that. But we are allowed to think outside the box. We are allowed to bring conjecture to the table. Otherwise, we're not going to move anywhere anytime soon. You know, that's the way I see it, Paul.
Yes. Well, as with anything, Philip, this doesn't just apply to the fields of ufology. I think whenever anybody comes with a differing opinion or perhaps challenges the preconceived notions, as always, the UFO community in certain areas of it seems to be extremely unwilling to accept any potential conversation, as you say, in regards to the possibilities of other things. And I've always been perplexed by this, Philip, because we're talking about strange and unusual things here, where we don't really seem to have a real grasp of the physicality or even the science that goes on behind some of these encounters. Because as you say, we are talking about people hearing messages relayed directly into their minds. They're having conversations with alien creatures, which baffles people because they seem to speak in their native tongue. Whichever country someone seems to be abducted from, they have perfectly normal conversations, which is a remarkable thing regardless. You have people such as yourself, Philip, who seem to transfer themselves through physical objects that defy explanation under the normal laws of physics as we know them.
You have people that lose time. It's almost as if they've been away 5-10 minutes and they've lost hours. And so I'm always surprised when people are so against looking at the possibilities of numerous things going on, because I find it peculiar, Philip, that people don't seem to want to accept that there may be concurrent themes running here. There may be concurrent ways of dealing with this situation that seem to be running alongside each other, and one doesn't necessarily explain away the other. And I think, as with any form of research, there will always be areas and certain cases where people, because of their steadfast beliefs, will either ignore a specific case, Philip, or ignore the aspects of it that they find too unusual.
Yes, it's almost like a rebirthing of the mind, and very painful journey for all of us on that level. I will make you laugh before I go into a kind of like a description of your wonderful narrative there, Paul. I was invited onto another radio program, and it was to be questioned more about my so-called, and I quote-unquote, claims, and that they wanted me to bring proof to the table. Well, quite naturally, my finger hovered over the delete button and I got rid of it. How on earth are we able to bring any form of proof? I mean, we did in the 9th of April 2016 event, was the last event, major UFO event that happened with me and my brother. And my niece, of all people, was also involved in that. She had filmed these objects on their way. They had been analyzed. They were very low. They came over us in triangular formation to me and my brother. Very strange, but they were analyzed as unknown. Now, when we talk about proof, we have no proof. We only have witness testimony. The proof that we have is only normally within film footage or radar. The rest of it, as we understand, could possibly, and I have no doubt, be secreted away. In terms of the structuring of belief, this is a very different thing altogether, because what happens, like any form of religion, most people become set within their belief systems, and they're quite rightfully needing to do that. But we have to understand that as a species, as a human species, that we, to be honest with you, we don't know much about our true origins, other than the Sunday school version that we've been fed, which is a load of old rubbish. And I'm talking about certain religious ideologies. I think that the reality of most of the ancient codices will tell us that there was far more with regards to our genesis than the version that we've been led to believe. And this is the problem. The system that we serve, which you and I know and many other good researchers know, is absolutely adamant in proclaiming that UFOs, no UAPs, do not exist, and that any mention of life after death must be quashed. But, ladies and gentlemen, it's still okay for you to carry on professing a belief that seems in my mind to be totally contradictory in nature. What is the problem in acknowledging the fact that UFOs are a reality, regardless of whether or not we have an idea or not as to what their origins are? We know they are true.
Yes.
And what also is the problem in acknowledging the scientific data with regards to life after death? You know, Paul, I always say over and over again, this entire system is totally backwards. But going back to the and highlighting the structuring of the UFO department, certainly with its varied sections, it is a nightmare. It's a problem. Because as a species, as a human species, we are forever evolving to a degree forward, consciously. We're becoming smarter. We're beginning to use our minds a lot more. And that's an era that has been subjugated by a system that doesn't really care less about us. All it's interested in the system we serve is money and control and subjugation. But I believe that as we evolve, so it appears, does the intelligence or the force behind the UFO UAP phenomena. And this also brings into the fray other very unique areas of study, not just within ufology, but also within cryptozoology and also what we call the supernatural. And people say, well, hang on a minute, you know, UFOs are in this box up here, there, now it's UAPs, and dogmen are in that box, and Sasquatch in that box, and the Hatman in that box. And, you know, so, I mean, it's only wonder that we'd be going around in circles trying to establish one from the other. And I believe that when and within the book, Terrestrial Trespassers, we have to look at these other areas very carefully, because when we take, for instance, something completely and entirely apparently separate within ufology, the dogmen, for instance, there have been some cases where the dogmen have been able to mind speak with their, and I will use the word victim or experiencer, because in most cases when these beings are seen, let me tell you, the account suggests that they really promote fear, even for grown men.
Yes.
But there is sometimes, in some occasions, this connection of mind speak. And the same applies with Sasquatch. Not all the time, but in varied occasions. And I always recall, shockingly, and my good friend, Paul Sinclair, from up north, who, as you know, does a lot of research in Bricklington and Bempton in this area of areas of high strangeness, UFOs, UAP phenomena, and also the werewolf. We call it the werewolf here in England. I know the Americans are quite connected with it being known as the dogman. I like that title, the dogman. And he's had these reports up there of witnesses seeing this dogman within this area of high strangeness where light phenomena has been seen. And on one occasion, and get this, Paul, some witnesses saw this dogman appear, and it was wearing, would you believe, an earring in its ear. Can you believe that? So when we look at the categorization within ufology of the varied reports of alien encounters, we have so many of them, it really eludes us. And the same with regards to the dogmen, although there are varied shapes and designs of these beings, most of them look different. The same with the Sasquatch. Mind you, I think the Sasquatch normally is more or less the same in terms of its appearance, but certainly with the dogmen, there are reports of them being different in the varied experiences that people have had.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering to myself, where are they all? Where are they all hanging out? I mean, you know, we talk also about secret bases. I don't doubt it. Some people believe that the dogmen, for instance, are, you know, got some base underground somewhere. I don't doubt it. The same with Sasquatch. But if we really seriously think about this, we don't have the physical evidence, which reminds us that their appearance, all of them, are and seem to operate on a multi-dimensional level of reality, which makes us as the human, the alien, as it were, because we appear to be so removed, far removed from these other beings. So I think that's interesting grounds. And I have been asked before whether or not, you know, are we dealing with separate forces, or are we dealing with one major force that's operating on one level and making us believe all this? Well, I kind of find that hard to believe. I believe that we're dealing with a multitude of forces, but at the same token, it makes us question, doesn't it, about what we are actually dealing with in terms of this supernatural paranormal UFO department of study. So, you know, as I said, when you start investigating into this, I was very much the nuts and bolts man. I also believed that it was operating on a physical level of reality. But strangely, we go through some kind of transmutation, as I said before, and an alteration within our structured belief systems. And I suppose that's important because we are evolving. And the force seems to be evolving as well. It's very clever. It seems to know us better than we know ourselves. So, yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly there, Paul, most definitely.
When I was reading the book, Philip, there was a couple of sections that made me chuckle. And not because of the uncomfortable situation you found yourself in, but the very polite descriptions you have of certain characters without naming names. And obviously you were asked to join a show to discuss it. And I've seen this several times, Philip, when people have an experience that goes against certain other people's beliefs, they seem to try and either turn the story round to make it as though you've not been open enough to accept it properly, or you're not intelligent enough to understand what's occurred. And I don't understand this aspect that we still see in all forms of Fortean research, where witnesses are often disregarded as not understanding what they're reporting because it clashes with the person who's investigating its personal beliefs.
Yes.
And I thought your description of the character who claimed to be an off-world soldier, shall we say?
Yes.
As soon as I read that description, I knew exactly who you were talking about.
Yes, I do believe that, you know, when we're dealing with the multifaceted components to this subject matter, indeed varied subject matters, because it is opening up to other areas of research, not just within ufology, which is a great passion of mine, but also these other areas. Where can we differentiate fact from fiction? And that also puts me in a difficult situation because I, quote unquote, claim that I've had an abduction. But my abduction seems to have mirrored many other people's abductions, although their experiences were slightly different. But you'll get some people who will come forward, as I have had, and state that, you know, that you are wrong and that this is all connected with the military, and I'm not disputing that. But where do we divide fact from fiction? And this is the really difficult, murky part, not only with the system that we serve that is doing everything within its power to disable any thought or conjecture surrounding the UFO, UAP phenomenon as a reality, the same with life after death. And taking out the religious ideologies with regards to that, although they are important constructs for some people, I understand that. But when you get into the field of UFO research and you are met by, and let me tell you, I've been very honored to have been linked with the most incredible minds within ufology, and most of those brilliant minds are understanding to a degree that we can juggle around with theoretical models. That's what it's all about, trying to deal with and gentlemanly, well, it could be this or it could be that, and let's look at this or let's look at that. But you'll get some people who will force their way through and categorically tell you what it's all about. I've had some people even telling me, with regards, embarrassingly, to three of the beings that I saw during my abduction, three of them together, their names and their levels of high command and even what status they had. At that point, Paul, I have lost the plot.
Yes.
As I said, you know, seriously, I'm not a scientist. I'm just a regular guy like many other good guys and lasses, brilliant lasses, you know, within the field of research. There are many of them. Kathleen Marden, wonderful friend, and Dr. Irina Scott, brilliant lady. You know, there are many of these people, and it's not about name dropping. It's about dealing with the scientific analysis or the understanding that we're coming towards this and trying to put patterns together. And there are patterns. There are connection links there. But when you have someone coming forward telling you that they are battling off-world reptilians and the rest of it, I found myself challenged on a mental level because I didn't know how to collate this information. And then we get to the super soldier part, which is another uncomfortable territory. And of course, you find yourself in the firing line with regards to people. If you suggest that, you know, I'm finding it a little bit difficult to swallow that at the moment because I need to look into that. So it's very difficult. I mean, this is where the force or the phenomena operates so well within the UFO department, within these beings, these intelligences, this force, whatever it is. It's very clever because it knows that when it's dealing with the mind, and that's primarily not just our physiology, but also the human mind, when it's dealing with the mind, it knows that our minds are basically very easy to manipulate, very easy to control. During my abduction that I had back in 1989, there was a question I wanted to pose, whether mentally or verbally, I can't remember, I'm sure it was verbal, people put you on the spot. During that period of time, it seemed very normal to communicate, but the gray at the end was the only thing that I communicated with, but it didn't communicate back with me because I wanted to ask it how it was I was able to be brought through solid matter. I mean, how is that possible? And the gray froze and then started to raise his head up and talk in some unintelligible random sound that sounded very much like the voice synthesizer to mine and my brother's ZX81 that we had all those years ago. And everything froze. But as that froze, My brother had also repeated something earlier that evening before the onslaught of the abduction occurred, with a strange appearance of that light and that small grey-like entity that was all dressed in black that came through the house. He froze and looked up to the ceiling and said, there's going to be an earthquake or grandma's going to die. So I think and feel that, you know, when we're dealing with this phenomena, we're not just looking at something that is the spaceman or coming from another planet. I think there's far more involved with this that really does send us down the rabbit hole. But certainly when you have people claiming that they are battling off-world reptilians, or that they're saving Earth's arse, as it were, from these bad creatures or beings, I don't know. I mean, all I am trying to do on within my level of investigations is looking at the rawness of the experience and trying to connect the patterns that have been established and are apparent within not just ufology, but also cryptozoology and elements of the paranormal. So I do agree with you that, you know, we have to be very careful, but then also that finger of doubt is then thrown onto you. So it's almost like a psychological game with some other people. It's like, well, you know, you've got no proof, hardly any proof, that you know, what happened to you happened to you. So how can you disprove my claims? But I have never disclaimed anyone's claims whatsoever. I have always tried to remain neutral to the whole area of research within UFO and paranormal cryptozoological areas. And I'm no expert, but I know enough to assume that when we are dealing with facts to a degree that seem to make sense when we're making those connections. But some people, I think, just want to ride on the bandwagon. They want the fame. They want their personality to be known. And they're not really interested in the phenomena. They're more interested in climbing over you and getting to the top. But I always say, and you'll laugh at this, no one has exclusive rights to the phenomena. The phenomena belongs to all of us because we are also part of that phenomena.
I agree, Philip. And it's, I have to say, when you deal with a variety of strange topics, even I have to say that I draw the line at certain things. And throughout my life, I have seen numerous individuals claim to have been handpicked to defend the Earth from alien invasion, and be they fighting in underground caverns or being transported to Mars as part of this special space force. I'm always intrigued because, near enough to a man, these people all seem to be of a similar build, of a similar age. They don't strike me as the kind of people I would suggest are high-level soldiers, to say the least. And one of the things that's always infuriated me about some of these individuals is they make these extraordinary claims about physical abilities, Philip. And I would love somebody one day to ask them, well, show me then. If you say you can jump 10 foot, do it. You know, if you can somersault for 100 metres non-stop, as you claim, then do it. Because if you make incredible claims that seem fairly normal in the realms of it, they're not saying that they can fly through the air or anything. They're saying that they possess extremely enhanced strength and stamina. And yet they never demonstrate this. And as you say, the character in your book, when I read that description, I knew immediately who you meant. And there are several of these people. And that, like I say, there have been for several years. I was chuckling as well, because whenever I see things, it always reminds me of one of my favourite of these stories, which was the gentleman John Edmonds, who had a ranch in Arizona that he put on the market for $5 million, I think it was, several years ago.
Oh, yes, yes.
And who claimed that he was killing and decapitating aliens with a samurai sword.
Samurai sword, yes.
And I'm sure if somebody puts a ranch on the market for a large amount of money, I'm not that I'm wishing to cast aspersions on the claims, but it seems that some people just really want to sort of hang on the coattails of Skinwalker Ranch and see if there's any millionaires wandering around who want to buy a ranch that's allegedly full of high strangeness, Philip.
Yes, and you see there are some people, unfortunately, and of course, and I'll be attacked for this, but I'm not bothered because I'm on the firmly on the ground with the researchers and the theoretical content that we are looking for the truth towards this phenomena and dealing with the rawness of that, the research material, the statistics, and also the connections, the patterns are what's important. Now, I've noticed that a lot of people are selling a lot of books out there that claim all sorts of things. The Secret Space Program, when you look at certain authors with those books, they bump them up. Well, of course, you can make anything up, can't you, about that? But when we're dealing with serious research, we have to start from the bottom and work our way up. And with regards to claims, you know, this is where it gets really murky because people will be pointing fingers at you and less at themselves. So I believe that there are people who are very clever, who are in it just for the money and also for the fame. But I have never once approached anyone to go on a program. I've always been approached myself. I'm very flattered, very honored. And I believe that with my fellow men and women in the research department, that's where I stand. So I do agree with you that, you know, when I've been told by a certain person or two people on one show I went on, the two from America were, had it all worked out. The lady was being abducted every night of the week, Love and Light Adventures. And the gentleman was correcting me on certain specifics when he said, is that one of the twins from the UK? Oh, I want a word with him. I'm going to tell you he doesn't know what he's talking about. And the only reason that he had negative experience, i.e. the abduction in 1989, was because he's a negative person. I think, hang on just a minute. You do not know me from Adam. You do not know me at all, sir. Mm. And then, of course, we had the other part where the off-world negative side was coming in. And I thought there really was going to be a war there. And I gingerly got out of that interview. So I think that, you know, statistically speaking, there are certain areas that we can measure in terms of exploration, in terms of trying to gain this proof. And I believe that psychic department is one of them, not talking about the off-world reptilian battles, but consciousness and the afterlife. And very interestingly enough, that when I had the experience back in 1989, certainly that wasn't the first, the viewing of UFOs had been prominent and at close range. The one with me and my identical twin brother when we were 13 years of age in Middlesex, Felton Road. My grandparents lived in a big house that was built by my uncle, and they had the other one beside it as well. And a silver sphere came in broad daylight and came right over our grandmother's head. And of course, you know, that was an area of high strangeness that we couldn't work out. So I believe that when we're dealing with this subject matter, when we're looking into this, it does get very murky, and there is no real transparency until you grab hold of those areas that have affected you. So we do know that there is a form of conscious survival beyond this realm that could be measured by some brilliant mediums on this planet, mediators, translators of information that's coming through from what we call the other side. And also measuring those experiences that people had with regards to abductions, there are clear patterns there. We don't seem to have any patterns with regards to these off-world super soldiers or reptilian battles. So I'm not sure if we are able to gain grounds by looking into that area. So you can see, can't you, that it's very slippery grounds when you get involved in this, because you can easily get sucked into something. But thankfully, we are of those kind of minds, Paul, yourself included, and me and many other good people who can nod and smile and shake hands afterwards, but come away thinking, well, I'm not really sure about all of that. We've got enough problems with the grades and the abduction phenomena and the appearance of these UFOs, UAPs, without having to deal with these battles that are supposed to be raining around us, and they're saving the Earth's ass. But to be honest with you, if there was some kind of agenda on that level, if there were these super soldiers that was trying to protect the Earth from this menace, nothing's really changed from our end. And that's a really nasty thing about it. With regards to our evolution, our species. So I think we, looking at it basically in the terminology that on a research level, on a level where serious level investigations, if I could use that, is very raw and telling us that the phenomena is not assisting our species and that most of it is out for its own ends and not ours, whatever those ends are. So, you know, I think we'll leave the off-world battles for another time, another space. Perhaps they could include it. I'm sure they have in a Star Trek episode. It'll make a great film, I can tell you.
I was going to say, I think I've seen that film several times, Philip. Over the years. But I think as well, it's aspects of this that tend to sort of derail everybody else, because often the mass media will focus on the more outlandish stories such as this. And I know these off-world stories are part of a, like I say, they're a constant narrative. If you've been involved in ufology over the last 30 or 40 years, Philip, these stories tend to pop round every sort of 5 to 10 years. Somebody comes forward with them. But also, I think it really takes the focus away from people who are trying to do the proper research and look at the conversation in a more feet on the ground kind of way, where we're being balanced and we're taking on board differing opinions and trying to look at what's coming in and what's going out without sort of disproving anybody. It's a case of trying to look at that. Well, I believe this, but therefore this person's also saying this. Why can it not be occurring on both levels? Why does it have to be one or the other? And I think this is a very similar thing that you could look in regards to the paranormal, that there are certain rules that seem to permeate in certain aspects of the hunt for life after death, or that if ghosts or hauntings are real things. And for me as well, that's a very similar thing, because it can't be a one size fits all, because you have such a wide variety of experiences from people, from sight to sound to smell to messages to objects moving of their own volition, to seeing sort of the stone tape theory, where characters and images seem to be stuck on some kind of never-ending loop, Philip. And I think if you come at anything else in a kind of, well, this is the way it is and everything else is wrong, then nobody's going to achieve anything. And the only thing that happens is it just gets everybody het up and everybody starts to argue about these things. But it's also curious that regardless of the viability of some of people over the years who have made claims, and there's another character mentioned in the book, which is another one, which whenever I hear his name occur, Philip, I scratch my head and think, I can't believe anybody pays this any credit anymore, which is Billy Meyer.
Oh, God.
Primarily, one of my favourite aspects of the Billy Meyer case is when he was caught taking pictures of dinosaurs out of a book.
Yes, that's right.
And
yes,
claimed that the aliens had taken him back in time to take these pictures. And then somebody went very diligently and got the book that he'd taken a picture of. And people still didn't believe him, that it wasn't true. And I just, you know, when you've got pictures of people, you're saying, well, these are aliens, and they're dancers off the Dean Martin show, I believe they were as well.
Yes, they were.
Then you've got to ask yourself, Philip, that it crosses the boundary of investigation to become a belief system. It becomes almost a quasi-religious experience for those people. It has to be real. They've got to believe in it, even though the claims and the evidence put forward are also easily disprovable. That even still, there will people say, and I've seen that, I saw this a couple of weeks ago, somebody said, they've never been able to discredit the Billy Meyer case. And I thought, you've clearly not read a lot then.
Yes, and you know, that is a very dangerous thing. You're correct, absolutely. It becomes a type of religion. And of course, with religion, you will not be able to move or try to suggest that, look, there may be more to this. For instance, going into the ancient codices of the ancient Mesopotamia, going into Akkadian, I'm not going to go into that, but tells us a very different story about the creation mythos, as they call it, the mythos. Mm. And I have always speculated that the only way that our species could have flourished so quickly was through the advancement of some other extraterrestrial intervention, genetic mutations. That made absolute sense to me. And I always knew as a kid that the hominid was somehow infused with some kind of alien DNA, if we can use that, and created the model of man. And we can actually suggest that is a possibility, because the human has been designed ill-equipped to survive on this planet. We shy from our very own sun. We don't have enough hair on our body and the rest of it. But most people will go through also with the Darwin theory of evolution, and that will never change. The same with God. If we take God, for instance, apparently, through certain interpreters, there was never any mention of a God in the codices, the Bible, the original text, which, by the way, has been written by many different authors over varied time scales. So everything that exists within the Annals of Belief cannot apparently be, challenged. And we're not challenging it. We're just looking into it. And for instance, when I spoke to a religious friend of mine about God and the evolution process, which I thought was their interpretation of God creating man and woman, Adam and Eve, and they will not accept the primary reason that there is a possibility that we would be genetically created through something other than, God, a supreme being, which I believe in anyway in terms of a source and energy, a consciousness, whatever it is. But certainly there was no mention of God, of a God. There were gods that were revered, engineers, I suppose. Now, looking at those cases, Billy Meir, going forward now into into current times, and not in the creation mythos, but looking at people like Billy Meir and many others, Adamski, a very shady character as well. Unfortunately, these individuals will try everything that they can, those that are surviving, to retain their respectability. But I think and feel, Paul, that eventually, people call their bluff. For instance, when I got involved with the Rensselaer case, dare I mention that, because when you do start to step over into someone else's territory, when I mean someone else's, those that preside within that area, it's no different from Roswell,
yes,
and what happened there, you will invariably find that you are not welcome. And I will tell you that I had a lot of problems with regards to Sky Crash throughout time when it was originally published by a publisher back in 2013, I believe it was, before Philip Mentel reprinted it for Flying Disc Press. And I did like the newer version that he's done. But, people say, oh, I can't believe that Brenda Butler, and she's a lovely lady and very respected, and I'm not talking about her here in terms of the difficulties that I found, and certainly not with Colonel Charles Holt, who I met, an esteemed gentleman, and with me and my brother through another researcher, David Young. But there, when there were claims with Brenda about this reptilian man called David Daniels, just given an example here, and not to confuse matters, this is another entire different case centered around Brendersham, people would say, oh, no, it can't happen. But you know what? I did my research, and so did Brenda. She knew all the characters, and this guy did claim to be who he was. He connected with Ralph Noyes, former connections with the Ministry of Defense, and author of A Secret Prophet. Also, Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens in America, that he infiltrated, Jenny Randalls. Lord Admiral Helmut Norton, he had a meeting with him. So we can see that by definition, when someone claims something, you can investigate it and find, well, there must be some truth in these matters because A connects with B and then links with C and D. In a lot of these other cases, with regards to certain people that claim things, there is no connections whatsoever to be made. And I believe that Billy Meir, with regards to a lot of the claims that he's made, even to the point of them discovering models of these crafts that were found in his basement. And when questioned, Billy Meir said, well, he made them just to remind him of what he was going through. I mean, I just couldn't quite get that out. And I remember there was a book called Light Years, written many years ago, which was kind of like a try to be a balanced case with Billy Meir. And I didn't buy it at all. And when all of these allegations started coming forward, what Billy Meir would do is basically state that the men in black are trying to disinform. So he's using a psychological weapon to turn the finger of doubt against the people who are questioning his claims. So I think that's a very messy territory. I wouldn't even know where to begin by trying to fake UFO experiences or whatever, but people have done it. My argument is that we must all be wired differently from them, because what point would there be in trying to convince yourself of something that you haven't really experienced? It doesn't make any sense. That's why with the research that you do, that I do, that many other researchers do, you've been touched by this singularity, and we are we cannot work out what it is. We don't know what it is. But with regards to those connection links and those patterns, clearly indicates that there is something there. And then, of course, we have to use the theoretical content or models to try and establish what it possibly could be. But with Billy Meir, I mean, you know, he's time traveling, you know, he's going off on these wonderful journeys. And I did and do know about the famous pictures that have been cut out of a well-known dinosaur book that he'd used. And the singers were, well, they were singers, they weren't UFO nauts. And you just think to yourself, you know, buddy, just give up the ghost, let it go, because you're not fooling anyone anytime soon. But unfortunately, these people have their followers, their believers. It's rather like the other case that happened in the United States of America, when a lot of individuals believed that the comet that was coming, there was a UFO at the tail end of it. And of course, they all committed suicide, believing that their souls very sadly, very, very sadly, were transcended onto this mothership. So I believe that within the UFO Department of Study, we can you know, walk across very, very dangerous grounds. And I think belief, if that belief is shaped towards someone else's designing, and conditioning and not your own, can be very, very dangerous territory indeed, Paul.
It certainly can. It certainly can. And it, like I say, it completely takes away from any sort of real conversation about this, that we try and have it on an adult level. Even, as we say, when they talk about discrediting the abduction phenomenon, often people will simply say, oh, well, everybody's suffering from sleep paralysis, despite the fact that there's a wide variety of situations that occur here, Philip. They're not the same thing. What happened to you isn't the same that happened to Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker, for example.
Correct.
And it isn't the same as what happened to Terry Lovelace. Or you think of Andre Bios Boas from South America.
Yes.
There is, once you start to look at these cases, there is a massive difference in a lot of them. Yes, they all seem to have... The only sort of connection is that it seems to be some kind of interdimensional, extraterrestrial, alien-type creature that's involved in all of them. And even that, it's not the same kind of creatures that people are seeing. And so, as someone that's had one incident of sleep paralysis, it was very scary, but I didn't see anything, and I didn't think I was being taken anywhere. And I was quite aware of what was going on. I couldn't do anything about it till my body decided to catch up with my brain. But it's a very disconcerting thing that can happen. And I find when you try to, as with anything, even if you're on the side of looking into this phenomena on a sort of I believe in this aspect to it, Philip, as we're saying here, you can't go at either side of the argument with a one-size-fits-all explanation, because both sides will be wrong, because there will always be cases and experiences that simply do not match those rules.
Absolutely, yes. And that, as I said again, where do we divide fact from fiction? And of course, this whole process appears to morph itself within our mythology and our fiction. For instance, with regards to the Greys, model maker Jason Greaves has just created, and ufologist, I have to add that he's a wonderful author as well, Jason Greaves, who is connected to UFO only, has created this grey, the classic description of the Whitley Strieber grey that he had experienced all those years ago. And of course, one friend of mine said to me quite correctly, you know what, he said, looking at that, because I showed him a picture of it, and I have the model, looking at that picture of the grey reminds me of the character on the end of Star Trek, you know, in the credits.
Yes.
And I know which image it was. And there was also the suggestion from someone else, very important suggestion that made quite sense, that someone said about the teleportation or transportation didn't start happening within ufology until Star Trek appeared. So one wonders whether or not this force or this intelligence is utilizing and hiding within our fiction in order to present itself, and again, in order to murky the waters. I'm not talking about off-world reptilian battles here. I'm just talking about the real cases, but there are parallels to be made in terms of loss of time, physical marks, also communication via telepathy, and also the description of these beings, which, although they normally look different, there is an agreement that most of them do seem to be the same, although researchers have their arguments about them being AI technology, clones, or Us from the Future, The Arguments Rage, but we do know that they seem to appear very much as other people have seen them, although you will laugh, my brother's an artist, and he does his own descriptions of the Greys. He's drawn some wonderful pictures of them, and even to the point where some people have approached him and said, I've got a laugh here, and said, I'm sorry, Ronnie, you've got the skin tone wrong. It's this. And Ronnie's like, it's just from my mind. I'm just creating a depiction of the Greys, and you're told by people what skin structure they have, the coloration, and all the rest of it. So I think, interestingly enough, the other point that I wanted to address here is possible that most of the people who do not recall the full experience when they go through an abduction, it could be possible that you know, that they are removed from their normal processing of conscious recall through the brain. And it's possible that if their real essence of them, i.e. the consciousness or the soul of that individual, is brought into the vibrational frequency of those that have abducted them, then there's no more processing to a level on a normal conditioning where the person will remember. But I remembered all of my encounter, and I still recall it like it happened yesterday. And people say, well, why did that happen? And I say to them, well, I'm very hard to hypnotize. Someone tried it once with regression. It didn't work. It just didn't work. So I don't know. Or maybe I broke the program when I asked that Gray about how the hell I was able to go through solid matter, thinking that he would give me the answers. I considered it to be a male, though I can't prove that. And that's probably why he malfunctioned and then went into this state that mimicked my brother. Who knows? But I agree with you. Most definitely there. I think that we take a balanced view, and a lot of researchers do take a balanced view. And like anything where there's a lot of murkiness, we start digging and rooting around to see where these patterns are connected. But certainly the phenomena is multifaceted. It will appear in varied ways, and certainly very different from one abduction to another. But I guess that on some level, perhaps this may lead us to the suggestion that it's operating on a very personal level with the individual. But at the same token, you know, this phenomena is operating somewhere, and it is real because it's, you know, connecting with individuals. It's wanting something from them. When we look at the Greys, for instance, I was interested in why it was that they were interested in our species, in the process of reproduction, in what makes us tick, as it were, as though they themselves had lost those attributes that they may have once had, who knows, or they don't have. Now, take this, for example, as a science fiction idea with regards to the past and as it stands within a lot of researchers, most notably Zetai Zichin and many other brilliant scholars, not just him, when they've deciphered most of the original texts, codices from the past, and talking about our creation as a human species does indicate that we had evolved within these gardens, Gan Eden, they were known as, and they were varied operations of them around the world, where the creation of man was meant to have evolved. Now, in the original story, the hominid or the Homo sapien was not permitted to reproduce. And then there was some rivalry between the gods or the overlords. And then, of course, they allowed reproduction to occur. And of course, going into the alteration of the genome, DNA configuration of what we were did allow us to have the longevity that we used to have going back in the past. Also, it is allegedly believed. Now, if this species that we called gods, that were very savage, I have to say, had created us and had allowed our species to evolve, to reproduce, and which their kind mated with our kind and created these hybridization nightmares, as they would call. And then, of course, there was a decision to wipe the species out, save from one and his family, most notably Noah. Now, if these overlords had come from another dimension or another system of reality, who is to say that they didn't create some other species that they would not allow to reproduce? And I did put this in the book, that perhaps the Greys are one of them, and they've come and found us here. And they're like, well, hang on a minute. The humans seem to have some kind of connection with us, but we're a bit puzzled because they can reproduce and they've got something that we don't have. I mean, you know, there's varied levels that we kind of like that I touched upon in Terrestrial Trespassers that are open to real debate. But it's just an idea. But it was to do with reproduction, and I believe that there is the important factor somewhere that this goes very, very deep and very, very dark, I think, in some levels. And most people within ufology do not want to address those areas. I'm talking about animal mutilation and also the other mutilation that we're not really allowed to talk about because no one wants to discuss it. With regards to blood, which was very sacred back in the Antediluvian cultures, which is very interesting. So, you know, in a long-winded answer to your question, Paul, we're both on the same page there, but I think that the past does, when we get to the truth of the past, at least as how we translate it, how we understand it, is telling us that the present that we're in, and indeed maybe the future, indicates that we're going round in this wheel, and this wheel has always gone round. So I'm really excited by looking into these varied levels of research, and trying to establish not just, you know, what we're dealing with in terms of this alternative force of reality, the Greys, you know, whatever form or guise they take, the tall whites and so on and so forth, they're all being reported, and not everyone can be deluded. I'm more interested also about the past and about Genesis and about what we are. So, yes, it can be very tiresome, very taxing, very challenging and exhausting on some levels. But, you know, we enjoy the challenge because when you've been touched by the singularity, it changes you because the system tells us, no, it doesn't exist. It's all in the mind. And so is life after death. And I wanted to find out, well, either I'm lying,
yes,
or someone else is lying.
Yeah.
Wink, wink, you know what I'm saying? I've got a wicked sense of humour. You have to have one of this. And I don't want to be criticised for that because I am human, by the way.
Yes. No, absolutely. I think sometimes you've got to, Philip, because when you deal with incredible things, you've got to have a sense of humour because otherwise you'll get incredibly stressed about some of these things, if not.
Yes. I mean, you know, it's like one programme within the media, I remembered many long years ago. And what's interesting is the media cartel, all controlled, as we all know, they will allow all of these ridiculous assertions on TV. And I think it's opened a little bit more now with regards to the understanding of ufology or the serious parts like Ancient Aliens, God Love Them, and the other series that work on these premises to bring this information to the public and leave it for them to work out whether or not they believe it or not. But In the days of old, with the media, they would quite happily promote the most ridiculous stories. And one of them was this lady I remembered. And she'd been abducted by the Greys, and she was taken to the moon, and they had a party, all minus a space helmet for her. And she said, I was having a great time. And I thought, yes, minus a space helmet. And I thought, this takes up primetime TV. And
yes. Of course,
this is what the system wants, because it's desperate to murky the waters.
Mm.
But I think that attitudes, Paul, have changed seriously now. I think we're moving into new grounds. But whenever we become enlightened, when I mean enlightened, I mean more aware or looking into different compartments that may give us some true answers as to those secrets that we're looking for. When we start to make some kind of headway, it always seems that there is something really nasty and negative that our system throws at us to bring us down.
Yes.
And this is why I believe that they, or those at the top of the symbolic pyramid of power, are very much aware of our ability as humans to think and create. And for a long time, they have tried to control, especially through the churches, through fear and mental subjugation. And that's why they brought in the Witchcraft Act to destroy anyone who dared step outside the line of that thinking and promote this fear. So the system now seems to be promoting, and always has done, generating this fear. And I think fear disables us. I think fear brings us down. And the system does not want people to be happy. You just have to turn on the news every day and you're met with a barrage of wonderful things that will really enlighten your day. I'm being sarcastic there. The radio advertisements, or yes, doom and gloom, everything. And there may be just a little splashing of something to give us a little bit of hope, just to, you know, stop grandma from shaking while she's having her cup of tea. Yes. So, you know, bless her cotton socks. But, and, you know, I think and feel that on a humane level, a lot of us now are now seriously turning to the system and questioning the system that we serve, which, by the way, has lied and deceived the public. And I think now a lot of researchers are really pushing, I wouldn't say so much for disclosure, because I don't think that disclosure will come anytime soon, but trying to turn things on their head to now point the finger at them, where if they have pointed the finger at us, we're now turning around and pointing that finger directly at them and saying, hang on just a minute, there are certain things here that are not adding up. And whatever way you cover your understanding of the phenomena, i.e. UFOs or UAPs, you know, let us now challenge you. And what do? They back away in a corner. They have the most powerful tool at their disposal, which is the media cartel. But you see, I think attitudes are changing. I think people are now becoming stronger and asking the right questions. I do believe that Whitley Strieber had stated that once when he said, we're not asking the right questions. And that's why people don't like me and perhaps many other researchers, because we like to get to the rawness of it. We like to get to, and excuse the pun, none intended, the nuts and bolts of it all, to find out what is going on here. And unfortunately, on a psychological level, and taking away ufology and the paranormal, but people today use reverse psychology. People deserve degrees in it, where they can't seem to accept the truth, even on ordinary levels. They have to make up something or convince themselves that, you know, it's all very different from the way they're seeing it. So I would just say, in the northern sense, which I love, what a bloody shambles. But at least we're working towards our truths and trying to understand.
Very much so. I suppose as well, I mean, it's always interesting. The thing that struck me over the last few years, Philip, is the kind of looking back that certain people have towards the work of Aleister Crowley.
Yes.
Primarily, and as you include in the book, the image of Lamb has always perplexed people, because it is essentially, obviously Crowley claimed this was a demonic entity that he'd conjured. Lamb looks very similar to the modern interpretations, especially from Whitley Strieber onwards, of what we perceive a greater to resemble. And so it seems as though, not that I'm not necessarily surprised by this, but I am. It does occur more and more, I think, over the last few years. I have seen that image more in the last 5 years than I think I'd ever had in the previous 40 that I'd been interested in this subject.
Yes. And this is interesting, isn't it? Because Crowley, I mean, I have to state for the record, I don't think he was the most evil man on earth. I think that he was a man who was exploring his own territory and those areas that the churches, the religious departments considered as satanic. But let's consider this. The mind is a powerful instrument. We can use it as a gateway of bringing things in and sending things out. This intelligence, this force, is also aware of our ability to commune with it as it is with us, on varied levels. So I believe that we may be dealing with a force which is very, very old and which can on occasions be conjured. And this was demonstrated on the 8th of June 1998 with myself and my brother and Susan at Rendlesham, where we summoned a UFO at close range. That does people do not want to talk about, because it cannot in any way interfere with the Rendlesham's event of 1980, but it happened. And I don't care if people say, where's the proof? Well, our agreement was on a psychic level a week before when we sent our intentions out. It was known now as a CE5 initiative. We had no idea what it was called then because I don't think it was created until a year later. I think Sir Stephen Greer created that later on, but we won't get down that road. But that was very interesting because the year later, I also summoned a dead friend. The only time that that happened, there were synchronistic events that led to these unfolding dramas, as I would call them, dramas in a good sense. So I considered whether or not, well, are we generating this phenomena, or is the phenomena able to interconnect with our consciousness? And I believe that it's possible there could be a merging of the two. So when we deal with Aleister Crowley, and, you know, who was a very prophetic author and very much into his understanding of what he believed was reality.
Yes.
He kind of understood that this entity was operating on another level entirely. And who is to say, of course, when we are dealing with, if I may use the word, satanic cults or initiations, the system and the churches are so, excuse the pun, dead against it. And I believe the reason that that is why is because the system knows just how powerful the human individually is and what that individual can summon. It's an awful waste of energy, I think, to be honest with you, if we're not able to access that. Of course, we have to be very careful when we are dealing with the negative side of these forces. That much I will just state for the record now. We have to be very careful. And I'm all love and light, not literally in the UFO department, but within my belief and structuring. I know where I stand on the right side of the supreme being, the power, the force, whatever we're connected with. But you'll find that it's a big no-go area with the system. And I wanted to look into that to think, well, why is this the case? You know, what is it that the system fears from us? And of course, history just will explain this quite clearly to you. It's all to do with human subjugation. If I was in charge, God help everyone, of the world, I would say, right, I know there's a portion of you that don't want to work. We'll have to sort something out for you. But all of you out there, you wonderful, brilliant, amazing human beings, what would you like to do in your life? What can you do that really that drives you with passion and purpose? What can you help us bring to the table to evolve our species? Now, that is something that I think it would be a wonderful, because at the moment, and even on our human level, we are not getting the best out of a lot of the good public out there, because they are doing a dead-end job. They're doing a job they're forced to do, forced because they have to pay their bills and so on and so forth. Mm. And this is why I go back and say again, this is terrible in terms of mental subjugation. Our species will see to its own demise because it's not bringing out the best within those individuals. And let me tell you, a few of those individuals have changed the face of our planet and were met with ruin. Nikola Tesla was one of them. That's just one example of a brilliant mind. There are many, many others that I can mention. Forgive me for not stating them. And even today in our world, there are brilliant minds out there. But we are just continuously finding ourselves hammered by a system that is telling us you are a biological entity. You have a sell-by date. You toil the soil. You ask no questions. You pay your taxes and then you die. And this really does get to me, because I'm thinking there are so many wonderful people out there who are angry, who are upset, not just about trying to knock their head against the wall and understanding the UFO and UAP phenomena or cryptozoological department or paranormal. Hats off to all of them. I'm not talking about the hat man here, by the way, but hats off to them. But I'm just saying that on a passionate level, you also get involved on an emotional level, and it is right, with regards to our species. It's like you want to shout and yell and say, hang on, you people, wake up. You know, can't you see what's happening? Can't you see what they're doing to us? I don't know, Paul. I could definitely state for the record that I never have felt like I belonged on this planet. And I'm not stating that as fact. I'm just using it as jest, you know?
Yes. I think often when you finally find yourself comfortable in your own skin, regardless of what field you're in, Philip, or you finally achieve that level of satisfaction that you're doing something that you believe in, that you're passionate about and you love, you tend to excel in it beyond your wildest expectations. And you often look back and think, well, why didn't I do this before? And I think sometimes you have to go through that rigmarole of normality before you either think, as with anything, for some people, it's change or die, because you can just find yourself, time drifting away from you, Philip. And the next thing you know, you're retiring from work and claiming your pension. That's it.
Yes. Yeah, and I'll say something here as well. You, within life, the really serious part, and you know, UFO, UAP studies, cryptozoological studies, and paranormal studies are so vitally important for all of us researchers out there. But when you lose those you love around you, when they are gone, you are met with a silence and the question, and that hurts. That digs real deep. And there is a part, I think, that changes you on a humane level, on a spiritual level, if I may use that word, where you're wanting to find the truth. It seems that, you know, most people are quite happy to go around that wheel. And it's so sad to know that most of those people could have shone so much brighter in this life, but we serve a system that doesn't give a damn about any of us. And that is the real crying shame. If we could work together, united, and, you know, putting all our ideas together, working as a unit to try and establish the best of what our species could evolve into, to helping stop wars and spending all this ridiculous money in creating wars and suffering, and delivering all of this into a more positive framework, then that will be absolute, to me, utopia. Hmm. But I can't see that happening anytime soon. I'm a realist. And I can see, as you can and many other people, that, you know, the damn frustrating thing is that, and it's clear to see within its content, that we have been lied to. And that hurts by a system which is carrying on that wheel, making themselves rich and powerful, giving themselves all sorts of gongs if you stay within the official narrative.
Yes.
That is disgusting. But I will, and I hope that we get to a point within time where all of these individuals who have helped towards the destabilization of not only our planet, but also the wonderful souls on it, because, you know, most people don't want war, they don't want destruction, they don't want divide. But you can see that the real haters are those people, those very people operating from their masters, injecting this into the news media every single day. And this then has an effect upon the individual within their own psyche. So, you know, I think and feel that until we can get past that point of hatred and destruction against ourselves as a human species, and then start to grow up and, you know, hand out that olive branch and work together to further explore these other territories, I don't think we're going to make any headway anytime soon, I'm afraid. So I am sorry, I didn't mean to detract away from the UFO UAP subject matter, but you'll find that on an emotional level, when you start to put the pieces together, you know, the components all in their parts, you find it's a very ugly picture. But I just say, thank God there are good souls like ourselves trying to establish those facts, trying to put the pieces together, trying to create these theoretical models, even if they're wrong. And I'll tell you something as well, just very quickly here. My brother does a job, and my brother's a very smart, very clued up guy. But people, even on the street, judge you. They're like, well, how can you do this because you work here? Oh, my Lord. I'm like, you're joking me. And my brother was very quick and turned around and said, did you know that Einstein used to work in a patents office? Did you? No. He did. He worked in a patents office. And, you know, and he would walk under a clock every day. And eventually, God love him, the answer came to him in the theory of relativity, you know. So it was to do with time and the clock. So never judge anyone, you know, wherever you work, whatever you do, because you just don't know how amazing that individual is, you know. So there we have it.
I think the thing was, as well, Philip, is often when you start to look at the bigger picture, I think that can sometimes be very intimidating for people. But I think you've just got to allow yourself the time and the space to be able to take a step back and deal with it in portions, really, rather than going full into it. And I think
happens.
One of the last thing I want to touch on, because I can't let you go without we cover this wonderful experience that you've got in the book, which is this incident that happened to a gentleman called Joe Barger.
Oh, yes.
Now, this is one of those strange things that there aren't many of these. I've heard a few, but there aren't many of these where you have someone that has an extraordinary experience with a dogman or a werewolf or a whatever you want to call them. And essentially, this is one of those stories where this is quite a frightening experience, I think, in the whole pantheon of creature, cryptid, monster encounters, regardless, Philip. This one is a top level nerve shredder, I think. But it's also this aspect of, as we've seen in numerous UFO cases, experiences, witnesses, abductees, all seem to be visited by strange people. Here we have a man, a trucker, who has an experience, quite a frightening one, and ends up running afoul of the law enforcement for reasons that are never made clear, but yes. He's very suspicious that he knows exactly why he ends up getting into trouble for what would seem no reason at all.
Yes, isn't that scary? And I think this, it's rather like an episode from The X-Files. And by the way, Chris Carter was a genius. And whenever it came to the end with Mulder and Scully, where they thought they had the proof, it disappeared in front of them. Or there was another organization ready to cover the tracks, so it were. And their bosses kept them sweet and, said, well, well done, job well done, just carry on. But with Joe Barger, that was a very interesting case. And I came upon that with a podcaster, Josh, who does a program called What Lies Beneath, What Lurks Beneath, sorry. I always get that wrong, What Lurks Beneath, not the film What Lies Beneath. And he was sweet, a lovely guy. And when I was able to put this story into the book, there were a couple of agents who were there ready to acknowledge that, you know, everything was fine. And there was a couple of bears there, and he knew that there weren't. And then, of course, getting in trouble with the law enforcement because he started to talk about his experience online. And this scared him because there are powers that be that were obviously listening to him and tracking him. So obviously when we are dealing in that case with regards to the dogman, as it were, the werewolf here in England, a very frightening case for a grown man, a grown solid man. He suffered with post-traumatic stress disorder with regards to it, but even more so when the authorities came in and threatened him. So it's clear to see that the authorities, as we all call the authorities, are perhaps working upon higher orders from those who want this subject matter to remain secret. That was a very physical experience that he had, and he actually shot the thing and saw it go down. And that is in the book. Are we dealing with some aspects of interdimensional or the very creation of perhaps dare I use the word, but on a canine level, a super soldier that's being created in some kind of lab? We don't know. There's been certain stories and cases where, you know, it's possible to assume that a certain faction of these creations have been made within a laboratory. Take that with a pinch of salt, but we have to be open to that possibility. But yes, once again, the authorities were there to hush him up. And a very scared man, I have to tell you, and I believe a decent and honest man. He was just going about his normal day's work, as anyone else would, and then came across a nightmare situation that actually made a grown man terrified completely. So yeah, that's a very interesting case there.
Absolutely. One of those that just makes you scratch your head and wonder just what is going on. Because it's weird and frightening enough to encounter a strange creature to then encounter other people that seem to be very aware of what's happening and you're in the wrong. Takes it to a completely different level, Philip.
You got it. You've absolutely got it. As I said, you know, I think by trying to remain, balanced within your views and within your research, I think that you as an individual will be able to deduce from what you have already ascertained from those connections or patterns from the past and the descriptive nature of these beings and also the witness testimony, you kind of get an idea that you're dealing with a case which is true and which is quite rightfully logged. And I think that's the important part. Are we any nearer in solving this problem? No. Do we know what we're dealing with? No. Do we have the answers? No. But at least we can conjecture. At least we can formulate certain, ideas and work with them. And that's what I'm about. So, there's going to be another UFO book in a couple of years' time that will go even deeper into those levels of contact. And I'm afraid that most of the readers, if they do get the book, will be scratching their head even more. But there we are. That's what it's all about, isn't it? It's left us with a big headache.
Absolutely. And surely, and I would categorically say not due to the quality of your writing either, Philip, due to the content of it rather than the way it's set out.
Thank you very much. I'm very honoured. Although some people would disagree, you'll get attacked anyway, and people put bad reviews, and you think, okay, you're entitled to your opinion. But, you know, if you're not going to read all the book, then, and you don't know what it's about, then don't make a review. that's my argument there.
Absolutely. Well, Philip, where can everybody track down a copy of the book and also keep up to date with your work going forward, along with the collaborations you have with your brother as well, sir?
Yes. Well, my brother's got a new book coming out later this year called Illusions, and that is about UFO phenomena. They can get hold of the book from Amazon, the most famous place you can get anything today. And the book, Terrestrial Trespassers, published by veteran ufologist and UFO royalty Philip Mantle in his Flying Disc Press department. It's available in hardback, paperback, audio and Kindle, and they can get hold of me or my twin brother through our website www.thekinsellatwins.com, very simple, or my psychic one, which is www.philipkinsella.com, as simple as that. So I mean, you know, that's if they want to get hold of me and they want to ask a question, or they want to get hold of the book, I'd be very honored indeed.
Lovely. Well, finally, Philip, before I let you go, sir, what's next? Anything on your agenda this year, or are you trying to just take it nice and steady and deal with the ramifications of your latest release?
Oh no, I'm always got to be doing something. I've just completed some articles. I'm normally write some articles for varied magazines, trying to look at certain cases and drawing upon some theories, and I'm working on a new book, which is deals with incarnation, reincarnation, the avatar. The stories of the masters from the past, the incarnation process and memory, and our purpose here on Earth. That's a book that I'm working on at the moment. I have a publisher already for that, and I've just completed a segment on interdimensional communication that dealt with the Rennesham case when we summoned the UFO, that's going into another book through the Near Death Institute, which is they publish a number of books. And after that, I've got another two projects I want to work on. So one of them will be about the psyche, human psyche, and the other one, the UFO one. So yeah, I'm forever busy, like most of us. So I've got a lot of work to do before I take my last breath here and then find out what's really going on, because I'm going to ask for a refund when I get over there.
Oh, well, fabulous. Thank you as always, Philip. It's always a pleasure spending time in your company, sir. And I just wish you the very best, and hopefully we'll speak again later in the year, my friend.
Thank you very much, Paul, for having me on your amazing show. I'm very honoured. And it's been such an intellectual treat to see how we grapple with these affairs. And they're all theoretical in nature, but in terms of its content, it's been so interesting. Thank you so much, Paul.
My pleasure. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.